I know where there's a buckeye tree. It had nuts as far as the eye could see, but now just hundreds and hundreds of shells. I don't want to know what that foretells. Hey there, this is where the arts and culture of West Wisconsin congregates and communicates. I'm Al Ross. Thanks for finding a place in the audience this week. Coming up, she writes screenplays. Family members are part of the production team, and they get movies made. Andrea Polnasek lives and works as a social worker in Chippewa Falls. We'll tell you about her Tinseltown factor. Catherine Thomas is here with Sheng Lohr Waldinger, creator and host of the Social Exchange Project. It's a podcast with a purpose. The Flambeau Valley Arts Association has been providing entertainment and enlightenment for generations in northwest Wisconsin. Like everyone else, they're adjusting, and we'll find out how from longstanding member and board president Karen Eck. And here's where we get the show on the road. The book is Wisconsin Legends and Lore. The author is T. Krulos, first name T, T-E-A. He lives in Milwaukee, and previous books include Heroes in the Night, Monster Hunters, and Apocalypse Any Day Now. He gives presentations on the paranormal and is the organizer of the annual and upcoming Milwaukee Paranormal Conference. That was enough to make me want to hear what he has to say, so we recently spoke by telephone. You've written many books on the weird and the unexplained. The definition of paranormal beyond the scope of normal scientific understanding. And as I thought about all that and all that I've heard over the years, I began to wonder how or if our technological age has affected our fascination with the unexplained, whether we're able to explain a lot more today or at least do some extensive research on our own. It would seem that each new generation, which is more savvy than the last, might be less likely to consider legends and lore. What do you think about all that stuff going around in my head?
I think that you really got the right idea. And the internet is so funny because it's such a double-edged sword or a mixed blessing. So it makes researching stuff like this a lot easier. But I guess you could say the flip side is it's a lot easier to spread misinformation or hoaxes, too.
Which is happening.
Oh, yeah. It's a very common problem.
It seems to me it would have been easier to pass down folklore in days gone by because our world was much smaller than it is today. And yet, folktales endure.
Yes. If you think back before the internet and everything, that's how people entertained themselves. They, had to sit around a fire or gather in their living room, and they would share these stories that had been passed down through the family or the community for generations. This still happens on the internet. People share stories and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But, there's nothing more classic than telling a ghost story around a bonfire or, in front of a fireplace on a cold October night.
There you go. And a lot of times, young people hearing an elder tell them the story made it, more believable?
Yeah, a good storyteller can convince you that these stories are real. And that's a really fun tradition.
Mm-hmm. You brought up sitting around a fire, and that's how you heard things. But how early did you find yourself more than just curious about this stuff?
Well, I was a very avid reader as I was growing up.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have a lot of options. We didn't have cable TV. I didn't have the internet. So I read a lot of books. Being a young boy, I really gravitated towards books about monsters and UFOs and ghosts. And I really liked mystery books and adventure books. So I started reading about this stuff from a pretty young age. And then my second book was published in 2015, and it's titled Monster Hunters. And it's a book where I spent a lot of time hanging out with people that call themselves paranormal investigators. These people look for evidence of this stuff. And through that, I got to hear a lot of the local stories here in Wisconsin about ghosts and, even Bigfoot sightings here in Wisconsin. Stories like the Beast of Bray Road,
ooh,
which is supposed to be this werewolf-like creature that stalks around by Elkhorn, Wisconsin.
like you said, I mean, there have been television programs and online video whereby people have attempted to explain the supernatural, spending the night in supposedly haunted places with infrared cameras and aura detecting devices, etc. Is that the kind of people you hung out with?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. There's a team here in Milwaukee where I live, the Paranormal Investigators of Milwaukee. I ended up going on quite a few ghost expeditions with them. And yeah, they had this tons and tons of equipment, some of which I still don't really understand what it does, but it was very interesting.
And the movie Ghostbusters couldn't have hurt.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was a favorite when I was growing up, too. Ghostbusters and even the scarier stuff like Poltergeist and movies like that.
Oh, yeah. On the phone with T. Krulos, he's the author of several books, the latest of which is Wisconsin Legends and Lore. After perusing it, I thought, I got to talk to this guy. So, T., your intention is to simply, what, chronicle things? Or is there a part of you who would like to get to the bottom of some of them, like these other people we've been talking about?
I think my interest is maybe a little bit more chronicling them, especially in this book, Wisconsin Legends and Lore. You know, I want to preserve that. It's a part of our history. You know, I think it should be passed down to future Wisconsinites or people, you know, who are interested in Wisconsin's legends.
Yeah.
So really, I just wanted to try to preserve a lot of these stories, but I am curious too, of course. I'd like to find some answers if they're available. But on the other hand, I also just kind of like the mystery too.
Yeah, I
mean, the motorcycle that did by here.
I thought that was a cow for some reason. I thought this guy's a farmer. We get cows lowing in the background. Yeah, this book is less frightening and more, what, informative, because it has sections like Native American legends, lumberjack lore, of which where I'm speaking up in Eau Claire, there's lots of that kind of stuff, classic tall tales. You do get into monsters and strange creatures, ghost lore, urban legends, and legendary places. The six official chapters, when I was thinking about these people who we alluded to in the past, and then I asked you about you maybe wanting to get to the bottom of some of them, I was thinking to myself, it can't be much fun to invalidate a legend, because isn't that what makes it a legend? We never know whether or not it's valid.
Right. Oh, there's definitely a fun aspect to that, too. I mean, the truth is oftentimes kind of boring.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you can make up a story about this creepy road on the outside of town, you know, it adds a little excitement to your life.
Yeah, I believe it's human nature to want to believe in the supernatural. I mean, as you kind of said, it adds another dimension to our lives. We don't want to know everything for sure, I don't think.
Right, exactly.
So this book, Wisconsin Legends and Lore, I don't know how widely you've studied these things geographically, meaning nationwide, but your introduction is called Wisconsin, Good Land of Stories. Does that mean Wisconsin is a hotbed for legends, more so than other places?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, most states and cities have some lore, and a lot of times it's very similar. It's very interesting to see how a lot of these stories are repeated, you know, like a classic trope of a ghostly hitchhiker is a story you'll find in a lot of different states.
Yeah.
But I think that Wisconsin's got a little bit higher ratio than some other states. Good combination of different generations of storytellers who have moved here over the years. Like we mentioned, the Native American legends and the lumberjack lore. Of course, people like to hang out in taverns here, which is a place where a lot of tall tales get told.
I stopped into a tavern one day. It's not there anymore. It has a new name. It was called the Irvine Ghost Pub. One bar stool had a little note on it that said, "You cannot sit here because this is reserved for the ghost."
Interesting, and I love hearing stories like this. I'll have to visit, and maybe they'll be in the second edition or something.
I pronounced it Irvine. That's the way people have pronounced the big park in Chippewa Falls, and people now are saying Irvin, so it's I-R-V-I-N-E. You, in your ghost lore chapter, bring up places like the Grand in Oshkosh and the Orpheum in Madison. I'm not sure whether you know that the Mabel Tainter Center for the Arts, which is very ornate, an opera house that's over 100 years old, in Menominee, also contends that it is haunted. The ghost of Mabel Tainter herself.
Wow. And there's something about these old theaters, especially, I find that almost all of them have some sort of ghost story to them. Something seen on the stage or, you know, in one of the dressing rooms.
Mm-hmm.
They seem to all have a ghost hanging around.
No kidding. T. Krulos, our guest, author of Wisconsin Legends and Lore, and many other books on the paranormal and the weird and the unexplained. Are you running across new material all the time? I mean, you have in this conversation. Are there new legends being born all the time, or do we kind of rely on the old standards?
Yeah, like we were kind of talking about before, there's such a thing as internet urban legends now. You know, people spread these creations, often starts as art or a hoax or something, and then it kind of develops a life of its own on the internet. So it's a very confusing time, I think.
What are you working on now? You got any new books in the works? Or I know that you run a conference in Milwaukee. How's that going?
Yeah, Milwaukee Paranormal Conference is happening October 9th through the 11th.
Huh.
And it's going to be a virtual event this year. The good thing about that is it's free, and people can attend in their pajamas if they want to. And you can register at MilwaukeeParacon.com to get free registration. I also have another book that just came out, and that one's titled American Madness. Kind of like we've been talking about the internet. It's about a very intense conspiracy theorist that I met. It's an examination of conspiracy theory culture. That book is also out and available right now.
T. Krulos, fascinating stuff. We're going to keep in touch with you, and please, you do the same. Thanks for being with us here on WPR.
Oh, thanks for having me.
I like that kind of stuff. Coming up on Spectrum West, the movie's called Switched, and one of the writers lives in Chippewa Falls, and the ambitious originator of a popular podcast. In the meantime, this. I'll get to that this in a minute. I kind of like Zydeco, don't you? Okay. They're all doing it. We're all doing it. Adjusting. All the arts organizations, all the performers and artisans. In some ways, COVID-19 has brought out the best in us whenever we can. We're setting aside the frustration and looking down the road, knowing there are very few signs to point the way, only curves and an intersection now and then. The Flambeau Valley Arts Association has traveled many roads and circled many blocks in all the years it's been operating. Granted, this road and this block was unanticipated, but they are adjusting, as Board President Karen Eck communicated earlier this week. First, congratulations on simply the existence of the Flambeau Valley Arts Association. When small towns and rural areas are able to incorporate and then especially maintain active arts associations, it's deserving of compliment. And you guys have been doing what needs being done for 49 years. Wow.
Yes, we have. Actually, we were kind of an offshoot of an original group that started even earlier than us. And believe it or not, I was involved with that group, too, as a beginning teacher here in Ladysmith. We used to belong to the Community Concert Association,
sure.
Which, you know, used to be a lot of those in the area.
Mm-hmm.
And then as we grew, and as the local college, Mount Scenario College, grew, they began to kind of do more things involved with the college, and eventually they took things over, and that's when it became Flambeau Valley Arts Association.
I wonder if community concerts are still going. I attended those where I grew up.
Yes, they are. In fact, I think the Phillips area has Community Concerts Association working with them. They're a group of three cities up in that north central area that still sponsor programs like that, and those are subscription only. You can't, you know, just pick up a ticket at the door.
Yeah, I believe membership was part of the deal years ago, too. My parents must have bought a membership because we used to go to the chapel at Lawrence University in Appleton, and we'd
uh-huh.
We'd watch community concerts. And what a variety.
Oh, yes. I remember seeing everything from the Vienna Choir Boys to the Belafonte Folk Singers through Community Concert Association stuff.
Yeah, I remember seeing the Chad Mitchell Trio.
Oh, neat, yeah.
And classical music. So I think that was the intelligence of parents saying, yeah, we're going to expose our kids to a whole bunch of different stuff.
You bet.
Good stuff. And similar congratulations to the people of Rusk and surrounding counties for providing the support that the FVAA requires. You are being very good to yourselves out there, folks, and you're providing a firm foundation for future generations, alluding to what you and I were just talking about. I've been, Karen, up to Ladysmith for a few shows.
I know you have.
Always impressed with the turnout and the hospitality. Tell us about your personal affiliation. I know that you've already said that it goes back even before the association itself. Your history and how you've watched it evolve, that's, I guess, the next question.
When we first formed the Community Concert Association, I was one of the founding people involved in that first meeting. I was, as I said, a new teacher here in Ladysmith, but then I was kind of in and out because, you know, that's a long haul to be constantly involved. The college did not have an auditorium, and so they always used the high school auditorium, and I was the high school choir teacher. So needless to say, I remained in touch with things for many years. And after I retired in 2002, I came back on the board and have been president ever since. So.
Wow. You have the easiest last name to spell.
I do.
And I bet you I even know how to pronounce it.
I hope so.
How else can you pronounce it?
It's amazing. But people normally think it's just too short. Two letters is just not enough. And so they try to put an E on the end or a C in the middle or even sometimes an L in the middle. Uh-huh. And so you never know. You're telling someone the name and that you spell it out and they pause and is that all?
Yeah. I used to know some E-C-Ks, but I've never known an E-K.
Ek is the Swedish word for oak.
I see. So that could either mean upright and strong or it could be nuts.
I guess so.
Yeah. One of the two.
Yeah.
We're talking with Karen Eck. She's president of the Flambeau Valley Arts Association. We have laid some groundwork and a foundation now. Let's talk about stuff going forward. How far down the road, Karen, were you guys on the 2020-21 season before COVID entered our lives?
Well, fortunately, we had not booked anything yet, but we had been talking with a lot of different acts and so on, and had many of them to the point where we were just starting to figure out dates and so on. Mm-hmm. But when they closed the school, we, of course, then put everything kind of on hold because we thought, well, you know, we don't even know when things would open up, et cetera, and we're dependent on the auditorium. Mm-hmm. From the district. And, of course, that's good news and bad news. We are dependent upon the availability of that facility, but also it means we don't have overhead. So we're in a better position to survive during this difficult time because we don't have salaries to pay or building upkeep.
Sure. That's a wonderful place. It's a very nice theater.
Thank you. Well, yeah. I think it's a wonderful asset for our community.
So back to the 2020-21 season, you are, according to a letter that I received and other members and friends of the Flambeau Valley Arts Association received, you are keeping the door open.
I just couldn't bear to shut it down completely for the whole year because I said, you know, we didn't know at the time we had to make all these decisions where we'd be by this fall. You know, the predictions originally were that we were going to be in pretty good shape. And, of course, schools are back open, but, you know, not to the extent we would like to be. So we just decided, okay, well, we'll shut it down for the first semester for sure, and then maybe we can come up with some other ideas for the second semester if we are unable to go back with a live concert or two. So we have plans. We do have some people that have performed for us in the past who might be willing to do half-hour, 45-minute virtual concert or something like that.
Have we talked in the past about the Ladysmith story? You know, and I have to, because it's an opera, think that you have your hand in that somewhere.
Oh, I did, yes. Okay. That was one of the only things we've done in the summer. It was actually something that we commissioned with the Fortissimo Coalition out of Minneapolis 10 years ago, and it was for the 125th birthday of the city of Ladysmith.
Mm.
was kind of an interesting project, to say the least, uh-huh. and dealt with the history of Ladysmith. Main roles were filled primarily by doctoral students at the University of Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
All the chorus people came from Ladysmith. We would have rehearsals during the week in Minneapolis with the principals, and then we would be working with the chorus on weekends here in Ladysmith until the last couple of weeks when everybody came to town.
And that's one of the things that you're considering being virtual.
Yes.
Yeah. Were you one of the writers?
No, but I was the local liaison, and we had to raise an awful lot of money to be able to put this thing on. And so I would help with that sort of thing and would do some rehearsal accompanying.
We're talking about the Flambeau Valley Arts Association. They call Ladysmith home, but of course they cater to people for miles and miles around. Karen, you will admit, I'll bet, you have found new abilities and a brand new flexibility that you didn't even know you had.
You bet.
And yeah, every arts organization I've talked to has had to find that out about themselves, one way or the other.
Yes. In fact, I had a long talk last night with Dr. Gerald Bradshaw, who was the producer of this Ladysmith story, and he's in education in Minnesota. We were, you know, comparing notes. He, incidentally, was a student of mine from grade one on.
Oh, wow.
It's a unique combination here.
You've been around, Karen.
I have.
Are you like 100 and something? Or?
Oh, no.
I know better than to ask your age, by the way. So you always urge people to consider volunteering, both themselves,
yes,
the human beings, and now, of course, suggestions for future programs. And we should remind people that 2021-22 season is going to be season 50. That's got to be big.
That's huge for us. I mean, to have a small town organization that lasts that long and does as well as we have had some absolutely marvelous shows. There were days the funds went a lot farther than they do now, of course, and,
sure,
and so we have had some truly outstanding performances for years, and it's just been a real boon for this community.
People who are hearing this saying, you know what, I live around there, I should volunteer. How do we keep in touch?
Well, we do have a website, www.fvaa.weebly.com, and we're always looking for ideas and so on, and they can communicate with us through the website, and I think there's probably other contact information on that website as well.
I don't have to ask you to keep up the good work, because you guys have done it on your own without my urging. I think one of the last times I was there for Corky Siegel, and that was sure a good time.
Yeah.
And it proved to me how eclectic you guys believe you can and should be, and I appreciate that. And I know everybody in your area and all of western Wisconsin and northwest Wisconsin appreciate that. So thanks for all you do, and thanks to everyone who helps make the Flambeau Valley Arts Association a success, and thank you for being with us.
Well, and thank you for all you do for this part of Wisconsin and everything you're doing this year to keep the arts alive.
My pleasure. Keep in touch.
You too. Thank you.
This is Spectrum West on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for being with us. You know, when warm, fuzzy stuff happens, we want to tell you about it. If you're listening on Thursday, today at noon, the Kiwanis Club of Eau Claire is going to be presenting Acres for Joy, located in Oliva, with a check for $25,000 as a part of its 100-year signature project. Acres of Joy, where horses and humans connect and help one another, helps individuals, especially children, through life's challenges. We may be talking with them about what they do and how they do it in upcoming programs here on Spectrum West. If you want to look them up online, acresforjoy.com, and the Kiwanis Club is Eau Claire, noon, Kiwanis.org. Way to go, you guys. It's a story about teenage bullying done in entertaining form, and it's on big and little screens as we speak. The story of making Switched, the movie, by screenwriter Andrea Polnasek, down the road on Spectrum West. In the here and now, Catherine Thomas has a special guest, one who does what Catherine gets to do, talk with interesting people, but this is on a podcast with a purpose. It's called The Social Exchange Project. And now it's host turned guest. Here's Catherine and Sheng Lor Waldinger.
Can you tell us about your background and how you got into podcasting as your passion project?
A bit about me. So my degree is in psychology, human services, sociology. So it's always been focused around people. So really my passion is people and having a conversation with people. I consider myself a forever student, I would like to say. So I learn best through the lens of other people, and usually that's in conversation form. And so I did a lot of research back in my undergraduate years as well in positive psychology. So I was always fascinated with concepts like meaning and purpose and having positive relationships with people. You know, what drives people? What are their strengths and motivation? And so I kind of feel like that was really the root of why this all began. And when I began this, it wasn't really meant to be what it is now. It was just like something fun. My friend and I decided we would just try. Why the heck not? And now it's become something that's so much more meaningful for me.
Yeah, you have a day job, so the podcast is just your project. Are you from the Eau Claire area?
I was born and raised in Wausau, Wisconsin, so central Wisconsin. And I actually just relocated to the Eau Claire area for my day job a few years ago. I really am somebody that likes to embed myself into the community. And so right away, I felt like Eau Claire opened, you know, their arms to me. And I really got to understand and know Eau Claire, like, as a culture. And I appreciated all of the arts and the music, everything that it has to offer. And so this really just propelled me into being more of a creative.
So it's the social, the letter X, change project.
So it's obviously a play on words. It first started out, I was inspired by a duo, a hip-hop R&B duo, Chloe X Halle. And so I really thought that that's kind of the vibe that we were going to have when we started the show. So it was first the Sheng X Addy show. Later, when she decided to resign, I was like, well, the X really became a part of our identity and our brand. And so I just kept thinking, like, what is my podcast about? And I wrote these verbs, like things that really meant something to me and what the show is about. And it just kept coming up, like, it's a social exchange. It's an exchange discussion, a conversation. And the three kind of main elements that I really look for when I'm looking at guests that I'm booking, entertainment, you know, are they interesting? Are they people that, like, whether they're in the music industry or comedy, I've had film directors on it, you know, are they people that are entertaining? And then I also look at education. Are they individuals that can teach me something? So, like, professors, for instance, and then impact. So that social impact piece is really what I have always been interested in, so social issues. And so that's kind of the play on words. There's a social exchange, but it's also like a social change. And so that's kind of, it just all kind of worked together.
I know you started this, let's see, when did you start this? Pretty recently, right?
Yeah, like it was a random idea back in November of 2019. And we got connected, my friend and I got connected. IV Studio is where we film out of. And we officially started and filmed our very first podcast. It was November 30th of 2019. And we booked really fast just because I think there was a fascination of where this could go. And so within like a couple weeks, we booked like 3 months out. And we were filming like every weekend, like Saturday and Sunday, because of course we studied day jobs. And it became a lot. And then of course COVID hit and everything like that. But yeah, it's been, you know, almost a year, I guess. It'll be a year and a couple months. Still kind of new to this.
Yeah, but you've got 23 episodes so far. That's pretty impressive. There was a new one just Sunday night.
Yep, and that was about entrepreneurship and music. And the two guests on there are just amazing people, just experts in business and music in general. So, yes, I just uploaded that yesterday.
So when you decided to go more for the social exchange direction, how did you identify a need for that in our community? Why did you think a podcast would fit the need?
Yeah, again, to be really honest, I never looked at it like there was a need and I need to occupy this space. Like, that was not my intention at all. It was just something that I wanted to do for me because of my background. So I'm Hmong, and my parents were refugees, immigrants. Like, I remember going to school, and I didn't speak English. I only knew Hmong. And so I've always been a little bit uncomfortable and a little insecure when it came to communication. And I've always been. I still am now, even, you know, as I talk a lot. Like, I still have a little anxiety that, like, surrounds communication. And so this really was something for me. It was for me to be able to, you know, show some creativity, be able to express myself and really work and hone in on my communication skills. Because, you know, if you've seen the first few episodes, I definitely was not comfortable. Now I'm a lot more comfortable. And so it was just a way for me to better myself in that arena, I guess. So I didn't really look at it, again, like in a business format. Now I'm taking it a lot more seriously. But before, it was just like, I want to do something. I didn't look at it like, oh, is there a market here? Is this something that is missing in Eau Claire? It was just something that I wanted to do for fun.
Shanglore Waldinger joins us today. She's the Eau Claire-based creator and host of the Social Exchange Project podcast, a conversational platform for, quote, extraordinary people to share their story. One topic that you talk about with quite a few of your guests is race and racial topics. And you also talked with a guest recently about fear. Talking about insecurity in communication, I myself am afraid to talk about race and racial issues. So I'm white, and I have grown up in small, majority white communities in Western Wisconsin pretty much my whole life. It's one reason that I'm really impressed with the Social Exchange Project. You have these kinds of conversations that I want to be part of, but I'm still not sure how to engage in them. What do you say to people like me who might be afraid of talking about race and racial issues?
Ooh, that's a good question. I'm going to be honest, like, even as a person of color, I struggle with it. You know, I don't know everything about every other race or every other marginalized group. But that is something that I was super passionate about when I started this. It was never something that I, like, I just put out there. But the guests that I do aim to book and connect with are people who are underrepresented. So when we talk about race or talk about any other kind of marginalized groups, I have a lot of people from the LGBTQ, you know, community also on the show. And then, you know, I guess when I think about the guests and stuff that I book, those are the people that I want to have a voice, the people who don't normally have a voice. So I guess to answer your question, you know, I don't really know. I think it's really just asking questions. That's what I do. If I don't know, I ask and I research and I try to do my very best to be respectful about it. And that's probably the same advice I'd give to anybody. You know, we're all different for a reason, and whether it be race or gender or socioeconomic background or anything. I think it's all about if you are coming in it with a genuine intent to learn and to know and to want to connect. I think that that is more important than, you know, sometimes the questions themselves, you know. But that's truly my philosophy. I'm still learning. I'm still trying to understand things, too, in this kind of climate that we have right now where things are just so sensitive, I guess, like the topic of race and equality. And so, you know, again, that would be my only thing is if you are interested, maybe do research and maybe really just ask those questions.
Mm-hmm. Another thing you talk about on your show, you talk about branding, marketing, entrepreneurship, business topics. Mm-hmm. I remember you had a guest who talked about 5V branding strategy, and value was one of the V's. What value do you hope the Social Exchange Project offers our community?
I feel like I have a couple of pillars when it comes to what I'm doing. The biggest value is that, again, I'm very interested in people, what motivates them, their strengths, why they do what they do, and really learning from them. So their wisdom that they can offer me through, again, their lens. And so I hope the value is that if anyone, you know, you may not like every single episode, you may not be interested in every single episode, but if you have one person that you connected with or one guest story that you connected with, the value is that you were able to expand your horizons and be able to connect with somebody who's maybe different from you. And that would be the value that I hope that my podcast brings to anyone out there.
Mm-hmm. Well, it certainly has for me so far. And I also know you're involved with Conversations in Color, which is a partnership between Pablo, Uniting Bridges, and Converge Radio.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking forward to getting to know that work, too. What's next for the Social Exchange Project?
You know, really my goal right now is, because business, the business aspect of things has been so new to me, and I've taken that a lot more seriously as well. I'm trying to balance between, you know, doing what I want to do with this passion project and staying true to my, you know, intentions and my goal, but still having to realize that, like, if I want this to continue and to grow the platform, I do need to have some sort of business sense. And so I think just to continue to build a foundation while still staying true to the show's ideology of providing a platform for passionate people so that, you know, I can still extend that and provide good content for my guests. That's kind of my main thing, is just to continue to build that foundation. But I am in the works of trying to explore other elements of the show as well. So you guys are probably getting this exclusive, but my brother, his company is called Film Tours Productions, who film everything and edit everything. We are trying to offer a different, content for our guests. So we'll be looking at maybe more of a documentary format where maybe we can go into their elements. So if the guest is, let's say, a chef or something, we're going into their kitchen and we're really going into their business and still doing that Q&A and having that conversation, but they can really showcase their talents then, and instead of the podcast, room that we film in, or maybe it's a professor and we look at, you know, maybe visiting one of their classrooms or a musician during their recording session. So those are things that we're exploring at the moment, and we are actually set to film our first episode, our pilot, next month.
That's a big element to add, how to show instead of just tell.
Exactly. Yep.
Very interesting.
This is something that I am incredibly passionate about. I spend, you know, hours a week just making sure that it's exactly what I want. I mean, I do everything from booking to the questions to really figuring out sales and marketing, the business side, but also the creative, you know, executive production side. And so I'm really proud of it, and I hope that people can see that.
Shangler Waldinger is the Eau Claire-based creator and host of the Social Exchange Project podcast, 23 episodes. They're available for watching on the Social Exchange Project Facebook page, and you can listen on audio streaming platforms. Shangler Waldinger, thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
And thank you, Catherine Thomas. Speaking of thanks, thank you guys for being in our audience. How can we thank you enough? So I think we'll keep doing it. This is Spectrum West. Support for WPR comes from Charter Bank, a locally owned community bank, now offering checking account options. Charter Bank is dedicated to being invested in the community, customers, and employees. More information is at charterbank.bank. The movie is called Switched. One of the screenwriters resides in Chippewa Falls. Here's a bit of the movie trailer.
Are you ready to practice?
Mom, I can't do it.
Juilliard would be crazy not to enroll you. It's just stage fright.
I want to be someone else who is popular, that everyone likes. I want to be Katie Sharp.
Isn't she one of the mean girls?
She's popular, she's beautiful and confident. Her life is perfect.
Poor girl, she looks like she got her clothes from the dump.
Hi, Katie. I just wanted to wish you luck on your glam slam job because... Sorry. Here, you can wear my shoes.
I wouldn't be caught dead in your shoes.
Dear God, please show Katie Sharp what it's like to walk a day in my shoes. Walk a day in my shoes. Walk a day in my shoes.
You have my face.
This is impossible. What are we supposed to do?
Go to school?
Now, it's really easy to judge someone.
But before we idolize or bully them, we should take a minute to imagine what it's like to walk in their shoes. Ready?
Yes.
That kind of makes you want to see it, doesn't it? As you can tell, it's the classic be careful what you wish for, but in this case, the granted wish is full of lessons for a couple of young ladies and those around them. The neighborhood writer of the screenplay is Andrea Polnasek. We talked the other day. Like a superhero, she's a social worker by day, but when it calls, she transforms into a writer of screenplays. Now, having watched a third get produced and shot for national consumptions, Andrea Polnasek, welcome to WPR.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here.
Now, the first question everyone must ask, and even if they don't, it's going to be my first question. Social worker to screenwriter, make that transition for me.
Well, it all started about 8 years ago when I was invited to consult with my sister, who is an actress, producer, and writer in Hollywood. She asked me to consult with her on a faith-based film.
I don't know, within about a week of time as we consulted together, she said, you know, do you want to just write this with me? So I became a writing partner, and we wrote Catching Faith, which actually was filmed in the Chippewa Valley here about 7 years ago. And then we wrote Wish for Christmas together. We wrote Catching Faith 2 and now Switched. And we actually wrote another movie called The Inheritance, which we just finished filming this last July in Columbus, Georgia.
Wow.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a family affair. Does she have roots in Massachusetts, or you have in Massachusetts, or she's just there?
My sister and I grew up in Massachusetts. Our father is a pastor of the same church for 50 years.
Okay, that's cool. And writing credits on Switch, the movie that specifically we're talking about today, also shared with John K.D. Graham, another part of the family, yes?
Yes, he is our writing partner. He also is the director of our film. He's an amazing creative genius, and he's a lot of fun to work with. And this particular movie, Switched, I was also the production designer. So I got the opportunity to work very closely with John K.D. Graham and bring his vision to life, and I guess all of our vision when it comes to our writing, bring that art piece to life, which was an amazing opportunity.
The IMDb site says that John is noted for directing films with strong female protagonists.
Yes.
Is that just through working with you guys?
It really is. And it's because when we began our journey in faith-based films, a lot of faith-based films star men and tell male stories.
Okay.
And we felt really passionate that the person purchasing faith-based movies are women, and they actually are soccer moms from the Midwest between the ages of 35 and 55. And when we started this journey, I was right there with three kids at home, and I was like, you know, wouldn't it be amazing if we could write a story that actually reflected some of my experience as a faith-filled woman? And my sister has been a passionate proponent of women-driven production. So that's how John became part of that mission, I think.
Okay, cool. And you've already used the term faith-based several times, so it's obvious that your films have intentions other than simply to entertain.
Yes. Well, Switched is a unique movie because it does have a faith theme in it, but really it's, I think, as good as Freaky Friday or Mean Girls at telling the story of high school drama between teenagers.
Sure.
But yes, we always try to have a faith element and bring it back to some kind of foundation where God is part of that.
Uh-huh. Andrea Polnasek on the phone with us here on WPR and Spectrum West. The movie is called Switched, released officially September 4th, and I believe it's coming out on DVD, what, next month sometime?
Yes, October 6th.
Although I understand there's probably one even newer than that. My daughters, my grown daughters, and their daughters have expressed a keen interest in it after seeing the trailer. I sent them the link to the trailer. This film, in a long way around, sort of defines the golden rule, doesn't it?
It really does, yes. Do unto others as you'd have them do unto you. The story is about two teenage girls. One's the bully and one's being bullied. And after just being completely frustrated and then humiliated kind of one last time with a prank being posted on the internet, our bullied character prays that God would have her nemesis switch places with her and experience life walking in her shoes. And they wake up in that Freaky Friday moment where they are in each other's bodies and then all of a sudden get pretty incredible perspective as to how and why sometimes bullies are bullies and what's going on that we never see, because all we can see is the outside and we don't really see what's going on the inside or behind closed doors for that matter.
So where is the film getting its initial exposure? It was released on the 4th. Where is it playing?
It is on video on demand, so it's available Apple, Amazon, Vudu, DirecTV, any place you can rent or buy a movie online. Okay. It also is showing at Micon Cinemas in Chippewa Falls, and it will, I believe, be there throughout the end of the month. And then on October 6th, it will be in Walmart nationwide, DVD.
So now, for people who are unaware, and I guess there's probably lots of them, the process of getting a motion picture in the can, as they say in the business, is sometimes a long road with lots of schmoozing and persuasion. Explain what happens, the Cliff's Notes version, after a screenplay is finished.
Sure. Well, our team takes our movies from conception to completion, which means we have an idea, we write a script, and then we begin to raise the investment in order to make the movie, pick a location. We tend to look for places in the country where they have good tax incentives for movies, and there's a few states that really have some good incentives. Once we've raised the money, then we shoot the film. The shooting of the film itself is usually 17 to 20 days. It's not really that long.
Oh, wow.
And then the long process is the 9 months to a year afterwards where the post-production is happening. And that's the time-consuming genius that goes into actually producing a movie that we enjoy watching.
Yeah. How about those technical people? Have you just found a really wonderful team that you keep going back to, or do you toss this out to anybody who's willing to do it, or how does the film actually get completed?
That's a great question. So John K.D. Graham is not just a director and a writer, but he also is a pretty phenomenal editor. Huh. So he works with an editing team that he now has created. Lex Benedict is our key editor, and she's just incredible. And then we have a sound design team that we've now used for four or five movies. And then we have an executive producer. His name's Ryan Keller, who helps us make the best deal, because that's the other piece of the puzzle. How do you get it out to the world? So with this rapid change in how people are consuming media, it's wonderful to have Ryan on our team, and he's just really kind of holding the pulse of what are people looking for and how are they consuming it.
As the screenwriter who comes up with characters, and you, as you write, I'm sure, have a mental picture of these people, do you then get a hand in casting them?
Yes, I am able to be part of the team. We have a casting director, but we all get to be a part of actually watching the auditions and sort of putting our two cents in. The director gets the ultimate say, but we are definitely listened to.
It's obvious to me that after your sister Alexandra convinced you to, first of all, consult and then write with her, that you got hooked.
I did. It is so fun to be part of that process, bringing a story to life. And for me, I'm a mom. Two of my kids are now in college, but I still have a middle schooler. And sometimes I just get so frustrated with what media is giving us and just disappointed with some of the content. And so it's really fun to influence and actually provide something I hope my own kids would want to watch, and I want to watch with them, and that their friends would want to watch. That's clean and wholesome and has a good message, but also fun and cool.
Yeah. Well, the trailer for Switch must have worked, because, as I said, my daughters and their daughters went, oh, I want to see this. People who write screenplays, it's sometimes hit or miss, but since you control a lot of the stuff from screenplay to completion, you may not suffer from this, but, you know, screenwriters oftentimes get frustrated because their stuff gets rejected. They don't all get produced. I guess my question is, how many of these have you written in total, or have you produced them all?
Well, I have been part of writing five scripts, and all of them have been produced to this point, which is an incredible blessing.
Yeah.
But it is true that when another entity becomes involved, they often do change your original screenplay. We haven't had that problem, but sometimes we've had to fight for a long time to get the investment to make the movie. And Switched is a great example. We wrote this script actually about 5 years ago, and then we filmed it in April of 2019, and now it took a year, more than a year, to come out. And I actually find it amazing. Nobody could have predicted what our world would be going through with COVID and the pandemic. This fall, we have more kids nationally that are doing school virtually and on their computer a large percentage of the day and the week. So there couldn't be a better time for this movie about being responsible with your social media presence. There is no brilliant marketing scheme. It just purely was the timing. And had we made the movie 3 years ago when we had started the process and hoped we could, it wouldn't have come at the right time. And this has purely been exactly the right time.
Yeah, for all the wrong reasons.
Right. Right.
You know what I mean? Bad luck begets good luck, maybe, I guess. So you said you have another film that's coming out, done what?
We finished filming August 11th of 2020, and it'll now go into that post-production process. So probably be about a year before it comes out.
That's called what?
It's called The Inheritance. And it's about four siblings that come home for the reading of their mother's will to find out that she hid the deed for her property on the land so that they would work together and remember their childhood and their love for one another and family and reconnect.
And they have to find it.
And they have to find it.
Okay, so The Inheritance is done. I'm going to put my feet up for a while. Or are you working on something else?
We are.
Yeah.
But I can't quite say what it is yet because it's still in very, very early process. But yes, we are.
It's enough for us to know. That's a good hors d'oeuvre. Okay. Thanks so much for being with us. This is fascinating stuff. It's neat to have you in our midst, and we will watch for the release. Well, the release is already out of Switched. We'll go out and buy all these DVDs. The Inheritance, we'll watch for that as well. So please keep in touch with us at WPR along the way, and we hope to do the same.
Yay! Wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah, I echo that. Yay! Thanks, Andrea. You know, I'm amazed at how much is still going on. COVID or no COVID, everybody's finding a way to do stuff and have fun. And we're going to search those out, and we're going to bring you the people who are persisting, you know. Badger football, too. Ooh, boy. Well, coming up next week, only in Wisconsin could a book about cheese get a second edition, but Jerry Apps has one, and we'll talk about it. We'll talk about an audio play of a classic being produced in St. Croix Falls as well, and some classical concerts are finding a way to happen. And more, as we say, always more on Spectrum West. For making this possible each week, thanks to Dean, Kate, Patrick, Catherine, Jim, and you. No need to be here if you're not here. I promise, if you come back next week, we'll do the same, okay? See you then.